Okay, and we're rolling, and action.
Crank up those subwoofers, dude, and check this out.
Hey, buddies!
Where the hell did that come from?
Yes. Would you like a drink of water?
Hello to Liam Neeson, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Still, Liam Neeson's greatest role to this day.
The hell we shouldn't resist.
Yes. The hell with Michael Collins and the debate that raged on Twitter last night.
That was so funny. Yes. Hello to Paul and David, by the way.
Yeah. So,
right now, dueling at the moment.
To the death.
So welcome once again to the Skanon podcast. The three of us, as per usual, are here. And, yeah, it's another lovely day in Dublin. I don't know what the hell has happened this summer, but, you know, it's all good.
Yeah.
So, fellas, what have you been watching?
Well, the last week I have watched The Immigrant.
Do tell.
It's fine. It's pretty. It's dull. It forgets to actually add anything. It briefly catches fire about 15 minutes from the end, but it's too late.
That's what happens when you show a nitrate film.
Yeah. And it's... has a beautiful killer last shot. I mean, beautiful last shot. But for most of the runtime, Phoenix is fine, Cotillard is excellent as usual, but it's just deathly dull for about an hour in the middle where you just do not care. And it reminds you of better films, and like, it's beautifully shot, but it reminds you of things like Once Upon a Time in America, The Godfather Part 2, that kind of thing. It's aping and really striving for that feel. It aims for it. In look terms, it's somewhat degree gets there, but then everything else falls flat.
Yeah.
But interesting, worth seeing, maybe. I wouldn't.
Well, I would say it's worth seeing. Gray is a fascinating filmmaker.
Fascinating, yeah.
But
his
films are frustrating in something. Yeah. I mean, We Own the Night has some great scenes. I mean, that car chase in the rain is stunning.
Yeah.
But it has some very rote characters and cliche
scenes.
Pretty
much all his films have that.
Yeah,
there's an issue.
Always
it hasn't put it all together yet. And I would imagine The Immigrant.
But it keeps edging closer. And
I don't know if this does.
I'm
intrigued to see what you think.
Okay, now maybe not edges closer, but
he
flirts with it every time.
And the ambition is there. You can see what he's trying to do.
He'll come right yet.
We'll see. I'm not convinced. I think maybe he has a great film in him, but I'm not sure we'll ever see him.
See, I've been dying to see The Immigrant for a while. I'll hopefully get around to it.
Excellent.
Philip?
Let me see. What have I watched? I don't get to watch as many films as I generally would like to because, you know... Day job, tired and evening, life sucks. But I made a point of watching and rewatching a few things over the weekend. So I rewatched Office Space.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah, I haven't seen it in quite a few years.
Still stand up?
It's satire is pretty very on the nose and it's kind of broad, but I identify far too much with it. It's,
for smashing up
we have one of those printers in our office, and I do want to smash it up.
That I've never seen that for the first time going, I really, really need to do that.
Yeah.
And it hasn't really gone away, that feeling.
No, I identify with it now far more than I ever did.
It's very broad. Some great laughs in it.
Yeah. What else? I rewatched Brian De Palma's Blowout.
Ooh, that's a long time since I've seen that.
Yeah, it's... it is fine, stylish, conspiracy thriller. Not as good as I remember it. It's... For me, his best will always be Carrie, and I don't think he's going to beat it.
I would agree with that. I think Carrie is as good as it's been for him, and I think it's the kind of sad to see it kind of decline over the years. Whereas new films are treated almost with a kind of
awareness.
A new Brian De Palma film as opposed to looking forward to one, which
is
kind of sad, but alas.
Alas, alack, and so on. The only other thing of note that I watched was the documentary Finding Vivian Maier, which I believe discussed last week.
We did
release. And I had much the same issues as you had with I Am Divine. Fascinating subject. Beautiful, beautiful photographs. But it's the telling. It's a very self-aggrandizing and self-worthy documentary.
And it can pull a fascinating character down. That kind of thing.
In a way, I think it tries to make her too accessible, reduce her too much, because she was clearly a lady who had problems and a lot of talent. So it's worth it to find out a bit more about her and her work, but yeah, it's those same problems as the documentary thinks it's saying a bit more than perhaps it is.
Yeah. It happens in documentaries quite a bit.
What about you, Nat?
Well, I saw The Congress, which we will talk about more when it comes out in next month.
Okay.
But primarily, I was bored to tears by it. Yeah. It's a very pretty film, and for the first half of its runtime, it's a very engaging and interesting film, and then it completely loses the plot, and it is way, way, way too long.
And how long is it?
It's over 2 hours. It's two something, and when it's animated for more than half of it, that's too long.
Yeah, it's very long. Maybe, unless you're expecting an animated film. Which is a different thing.
Well, it's Ari Folman that is following Walter Bashir, so unfair in my expectation.
Yeah. Walter Bashir, I think, is a very, very good film. Possibly a touch overrated.
I would agree with that.
I remember you saying that to me before I'd actually seen it.
Yeah.
And I'd probably agree that I think it's very good. I think it's very interesting. And it's a novel way of approaching a story.
And very relevant.
Oh, yeah, for all of us, yeah. And so The Congress has been on the list of I'm looking forward to, but I'll temper my enthusiasm a little bit.
Yeah. Same here, although as a big fan of some of his cast, I mean, Robin Wright, Harvey Keitel. I'll see it. But
Robin Wright, don't think much anything, it's great.
Harvey Keitel is very good. Robin Wright is good.
It's good to see Harvey come back, isn't it? Yeah. Grand Budapest as well. It's like to see him get a...
Doesn't you look like your man, Harvey Keitel?
he has a monologue in it that's very, very good.
I think he's always worth watching, and it's good to see him on the screen again, rather than Dross.
Yeah.
Or as opposed to Bross.
Yes.
Anyway.
I've also been watching Ray Donovan, the TV show, with Liev Schreiber, and as a Boston Irish fixer in LA. So
I watched the first season of that.
Yeah.
And I stopped watching it because of one reason. John Voight, who takes away something. There's an interesting story, and then he comes in and hams it up so badly that I just want to strangle him in. He plays it so broad and so loud. Do you remember him? What was the film he was in with Jennifer Lopez? And the
Anaconda.
Jungle? Do you remember the sneer?
Yeah.
He essentially plays the sneer all the way through this film. This program. Like he's living in a different show. I know the SDR is like, listen, John, I'm down a tad there with you. But the show was great, and the story behind it is really interesting. Yeah. I think he's a terrific actor, by the way.
Anaconda was such a piece of schlock that they got him, they had J-Lo, and they had Eric Stoltz.
Yeah.
They had to make the most of it.
No, listen, I'm
tone it down.
That's fine. No, that's it worked for that. For this, I'm saying it doesn't play.
That's a pity, because I've heard generally all right things about Ray Donovan.
Two-thirds of a very good show, I'd say. And then the boy comes in and just tramples all over it.
Pity, because it features two actors that I really like, Liev Schreiber and Eddie Marson.
Yeah, and Eddie Marson's great. And Liev Schreiber's great. The brothers, the story of the brothers is fantastic. I want that all the time. Then it pulls away to this, like, get away from that scene. Come back to the real thing, which is really interesting.
I think I find a lot of shows these days, that's a problem.
It has James Woods.
Okay, I'm in.
Sully Sullivan.
It does indeed, yes.
Monsters, Inc. would have been a different story if you played Sully.
It would be so much more creepier.
Hey, it's a movie about monsters, but what do you expect?
We're going to James Woods' woods. Family Guy. Okay.
Yes.
So, we're moving on to movie news.
Excellent.
And after the 4 hours that we spent last week talking about TIFF, Dan has more new films since then. So.
Oh, still my beating heart.
Yes. So they've announced a whole suite of documentaries that they're going to show. So one of the more interesting ones is it's going to be Ethan Hawke's directorial debut.
Ooh, wow. I thought it was directorial debut, though. He did. He filmed one of his own novels.
Yeah,
he filmed The Hot Estate.
Oh, he did, yeah.
Yeah, you forgot about that. So did most people. I've heard it's not great.
Documentary film debut. There we go.
That's a good get-out clause there.
Yes, it's called Seymour, An Introduction, and it's about the pianist, Seymour Bernstein.
Seymour Butts. I was hoping you'd say, but alas, no.
No.
It reminds me of Principal Kravopel's MASH. No, Principal Skinner's No MASH, No Chicken Kravopel. I want to see more of you.
So we have Joshua Oppenheimer back.
Oh, yes. His follow-up, isn't it? It's kind of a loose, not sequel, I got. Maybe
a loose sequel to The Act of Killing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's called The Look of Silence. So
on there.
Even that title is giving me shivers.
Mm. I'm prepared to be depressed all over again.
We have Robert Keener's version of the book Food Inc.
Ooh, we'll see.
Sorry, that's... Yeah, no, Robert Keener's new film is Climate Change, Merchants of Doubt, is what it's called.
So who's doing Food Inc.?
Food Inc. is...
It's not a... Okay.
No, that was Fast Food Nation. Not a great
no,
film.
No, really it was a bad book to adapt.
How should you find it in the rundown?
A fiction take on a non-fiction book?
It was nonsense
book.
Of an idea.
Absolutely.
It didn't work.
No, it didn't. It just wasn't... It wasn't interesting. Also, Greg Kinnear.
I don't mind Greg Kinnear. But that's for another day.
I have a vendetta against Greg Kinnear, with the sole exception of autofocus. But that's a debate.
That's great. I really like that film.
Excellent.
So one of the things they're doing is they're showing Roger and Me as well, which is Michael Moore's original documentary.
Before he disappeared up his own proverbial.
When do you think that occurred?
Probably when he won the Oscar, I would say.
Before it. No, I would say at that point, because I like Bowling for Columbine.
I like Bowling for Columbine.
But
after that then, I think... Problems.
Turn like 9/11
yeah,
is just it's flawed.
It's so skewed. And I thought of Columbine as it has heart. Like there's absolute empathy and
so
it really does. And it makes it really you warm to the film, you warm to the people, the subject matter, the whole thing.
And then he backs up the few very stark facts and it all works so
and
well.
And he edits it very well. It doesn't feel cheated like he does on some of the documentaries later with Pickard. It feels like you're being conned a little bit where it doesn't
Turn
feel
9/11 is all bluster.
Yeah. And I had problems with that. I had problems with the NHS one, which is named Sick Up. I've made a lot of that.
I haven't seen it
it's
yet.
It's not very good.
I actually found Fahrenheit 9/11 so problematic that she put me off watching Sick Up.
Roger Me is great. It's really interesting. And Bonnet Plotline is excellent. But after that, not good.
We also have, in outside the documentaries, we have Jean-Luc Godard's Goodbye to Language and Treaty.
Can't wait to see that.
Yeah.
I know we're in.
Haven't we just stopped caring about this thing?
Well, Goddard clearly hasn't, so I'm keen to hear anything he has to say. It couldn't be any worse than film Socialise, man. Neither have I, but Mark Kermode's rants on it are just priceless. For that alone, I'm willing to thank Goddard.
We have a film that's guaranteed to end with a black title card and the word Finn. It's called A Pigeon Sat on a Branch Reflecting on Existence.
It's a Ray Anderson.
It is.
I've heard just insane things about it. The little bits I've heard of it sounds insane.
It's Roy Anderson, you have to be roll with the punches, I think.
There's one I'm really looking forward to, actually, because I'm a Michael McDonald fan.
Ooh.
Although this one could be tricky. It's called Face of an Angel. It's the... it's kind of leaping off point, so I suppose technically it's a fictional version of the Amanda Knox murder thing trial in Italy.
That's... I don't know, I think I that find that material
subject.
rather sordid.
Yeah, well, it'd be interesting what he does with it, though. He's an interesting filmmaker, and not always
on point, by any
means. He's generally interesting, though. He generally experiments a little bit, pushes himself a little bit, jumps across genres like there's no tomorrow.
He certainly does. I mean, in terms of his experimentation, very few directors like
and it. And prolific. And maybe it's not always a good thing, but I always find the films... I would sit there and go, right, it's a Winter Bottom film. I mean, even at the end of it, sometimes it's a bit...
There's something good. There's something worthwhile in all of them.
Yeah.
Something...
No, I agree. I agree.
Something of plainly rubbish as Nine Songs.
Yeah.
He's a lovely guy as well. I've interviewed him. He's a nice guy.
No, he is, actually. He seems like... Any time I've seen an interview, he seems absolutely spot on. He's a fine filmmaker. At his best, he's very, very good.
So, there's also the North American premiere of... Or the Canadian premiere of Leviathan.
Leviathan?
Yep.
Now, hang on, which Leviathan?
Zvigenstev's Leviathan, the Russian one to show the camera.
That Leviathan, as opposed to, because they've seen the documentary Leviathan.
No.
It's just one of the most singularly sensory and out there cinema experiences I've had in a long
time. I still haven't got to it. It's on Netflix and it keeps looking at me and I keep guiltily skipping past it.
I saw it on the big screen. Try that.
Yeah.
There's a couple of, one of the great things about Toronto is they tend to do films around midnight, usually horrors, and I've seen some of the Evil Dead, or some of the Dawn and Day of the Dead films there. So they have Rec 4.
You made a fourth one?
Yes, they keep going.
Still wrecked.
We have David Robert Mitchell's If Follows, and most interesting of all, we have Adam Weingart's The Guest.
Oh, a follow-up to your...
Yeah,
I haven't seen Your Next.
Your Next is fun.
It's,
but I really can't give it much more than that.
It's got a one-off watch value to it.
Yeah.
Because it inverts the genre.
Can I ask something about horror films, just as a question? Do we think, and I kind of think this, so I wonder if I'm on the own with this one. Do we think that because horror films probably has the lowest percentage of good films, if you like. But I think there's a lot more bad horror than there is of bad or
bad
films, right?
Yeah.
I think that's right. So when something is not appalling, do we tend to
elevate it?
Where then if you sit down and watch it with a filmmaker's objectivity, as opposed to a horror lover's thing, because I've watched a lot of that horror films last few years that people say, oh, you've got to watch this, this is really good horror. And almost to a man, I've gone, really, that's what we're loving as a horror film.
Right,
there has been exceptions, but...
Give me an example of one of those films.
Well, I'll give you a couple of examples.
Sinister.
Sinister is one of the few that stood up for me. Insidious, The Conjuring, all those films. I thought brute.
The Conjuring is not a good film.
No,
it has three framing devices. I'm sorry, if you need three framing devices, there is something wrong with your film.
That's the last word that I'm telling
you. Well, they're very mainstream. They're, as horror goes, that's a very broad appeal.
I mean, interesting taking this year, even last year, what I've watched. Like, I mean, Oculus wasn't bad.
The Purge Anarchy went away from horror and became a story about society. And, you know,
I think that's a far more interesting take on it than its original. It actually did
was
intended to.
Yeah, well, it may well have worked.
The first one's a home invasion movie, and we've seen so
dressed
many.
Dressed up as some kind of societal commentary. And, of course, we know it's not.
Well, Kevin Smith's Tusk is getting its world premiere.
I'm hearing so many strange reactions to this. I don't know what to make of it. I know, Jay, you're not a Smith fan.
I used to be. And then
a lot of people were.
I was one of the early kind of...
I'm a fan.
You should watch Clerks, you should watch Disney, you should watch Dogma.
I like his films, but the man is... He's like, same reaction to him as I have to Tarantino. I can like a lot of the old stuff, but the films and the man himself.
The man himself, Smith, irritates me, and Tarantino is slightly less so. But the principle, I know exactly where you're coming from with that argument.
Yeah.
So away from the horror movies, we have Takeshi Miike back with Over Your Dead Body,
and it's not a horror.
Well, away from the midnight horror movies, away from the movies that are shown more screen.
Films are always worth watching. Even if most of the time crap, but
not only crap, but indescribable crap.
Yeah, when he and it's rare, but when he pulls it all together, the man has got something.
Yeah, but again, it's rare. He uses that. Visitor Q is still one of the strangest things I've ever seen. I'm scarred.
Itchy the Killer destroyed me, and then Audition is astonishing.
Yeah, well, there is best too.
I don't know if I'd say Audition is astonishing.
I think it's one of the great horrors. I do. I genuinely think it's that good.
Wow.
It blew me away. I remember rewatching it a year or two later, and it blew me away all over again.
I like it, but ugh.
Anyway, there's about 40 films are after being announced today. They're not all.
Let's go through all of them.
No, we will not. They're
You're not. Just trying to avoid the Comic Con talk, aren't you?
No, well, funny you should mention Comic Con finished up over
off
the weekend.
Sorry, Jay.
And so it was an underwhelming Comic Con this year. Last year you had the announcement of Batman vs. Superman and geeks around the world going apeshit, and you had the announcement of Avengers Age of Ultron, and that generated a huge buzz as well. Nothing really generated that buzz this year, although Mad Max Fury Road got great response.
It did. I always worry about, you know, this has been knocking around a while.
Yeah,
it has.
That worries me in general. It doesn't always come out badly, but it's always slightly worrying.
I know what you mean, but George Miller's back on board. They have Charlize Theron's looking quite badass, and they've replaced Mel Gibson.
Plus, Miller is.
No, they've replaced Mel Gibson with Tom Hardy.
And
damn fine job.
Miller is a proper director.
That
gives me faith. But,
and he's also responsible for a lot of happy childhood memories in the form of Babe.
Yes. No argument there.
Yeah, so they showed some new footage from the Avengers there. They had the cast of Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice on the stage, but they didn't generate an awful lot of buzz. Guillermo del Toro showed some of his stuff from The Strain and Crimson Peak, and that generated buzz. Also, they had Chuck Palahniuk talking about his new book and about the sequel to Fight Club, and that seemed to go down well. They showed some stuff from the new Hunger Games, but what was notable in its absence was Jurassic World was not there. Mm-hmm. So there were a lot of big movies of next year. Star Wars Episode 7, there was nothing. There was
of course they're not there. They're here.
But they don't have to do anything.
You're here talking about the things that are generating buzz. Is that all it's there for?
Donald Clark put it perfectly. It's a trade fair.
It is a trade
fair. Sites turn up, do all the studios bidding, sell people on the old nonsense. I'll probably give it 4 or 5 stars down the line.
Only thing is, you could make the same argument for Cannes.
You can, but as long as
there are any other films.
When we're in this chatting on Twitter about it, Cannes show actual films.
And Cannes is a market.
And
for selling the film.
Yeah.
The marché is a huge aspect of Cannes, which you don't get.
And you actually get to see films, as opposed to 30-second snippets or minute-long advertising.
True.
To every film. I can't remember who said on Twitter, every film has 30 or 40 seconds that people like, pretty much. I mean, you know, it's not really anything to do with that.
It is a massive backslapping operation, and I've been at Comic-Con, and it is amazing fun to be there. It is good. It is good fun. But that's because I'm in the, I'm in that zone of the
later
you. Yeah, exactly. I am the who they're trying to sell these films to, and I found this year underwhelming. I
found it very underwhelming. I haven't said I muted a lot of on Twitter.
So there you go. On to better news. Christopher Walken is going to be in The Jungle Book.
Oh. Mowgli. You're swinging.
Well, yeah, he's going to play King Louis. He's going to voice King Louis. Yeah.
John Favreau directed Jungle Book.
Yes.
So I'm King of the Swingers.
Well, it's just like Christopher Walken. Walking into the room.
Actually, that'd be great. Because it's only a voice performance, but still, pity, because if you could recreate King of the Swingers, and that man can dance.
Yes, he can.
Ah, yeah.
But he might do an Andy Serkis on.
Oh, good mocap. I would pay,
I'd pay good
anything to see that.
That
Christopher Walken would not do it. He wouldn't.
You can
pay
he'd
him
do
all
anything.
The money he would.
He will do anything for
I've
the right
I've seen
price.
Films of Christopher Walken over the years that he didn't even know he was in. He literally do anything. I've seen a film a long time ago. I think it was called The Sicilian. It's a gangster film of just the day we used to rent out movies on video and stuff.
Yeah.
And it was pitch Chris Walken. He was in it for 4 minutes. 4 minutes.
And he got well paid.
Oh, I know. Just to put him on the cover. It wasn't even part of the film. He just had to walk on for a couple of minutes and head off.
Well, he's joining the voice cast that includes Giancarlo Esposito from Breaking Bad.
He's
Akela, the leader of the Pack of Wolves. You've also got Sir Ben Kingsley as Bagheera.
Sir Ben. Sir.
Yeah, Sir Ben Kingsley.
Sir.
Yes.
Be careful there.
That's what I said. I said Sir Ben Kingsley.
Okay.
He's playing Bagheera. Idris Elba is Shere Khan.
Yes.
Lupita Nyong'o is Raksha, the mother wolf. And Scarlett Johansson is Ka.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I can't lie. That is interesting.
I know it's a, I'm in. I like it.
So, this is Jon Favreau's version, which is going to go up against another version that's going to be directed by motion capture king Andy Serkis.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Let me guess. He's playing everyone.
He's got a mocap to direct his role.
He'll never take the mocap suit off.
So
take it off, Andy.
That's due for release October 16, 2015, so next year.
Mark it or his people.
Other good news, QT, Quentin Tarantino, is back in the saddle for Hateful Eight. He's actually going to make it.
That's not good
his mind again.
And I'm sorry, but that's not necessarily good news. I know I am in the minority on this, but Inglourious Basterds, Django Unchained is just not that good. It is okay at best.
I saw Django in the cinema, really, really liked it. A few months later, I watched it again, and I lost the start.
Yeah.
There's major problems.
The end of it is appalling.
Oh, and
it's too long. The end is appalling.
And
it's
the hilarious...
the cameo.
And then the hilarious... the Ku Klux Klan scene is absurd. Belongs in a different
film. Oh, with the... Yeah,
it's
the pillowcases.
It is funny, but
it
does belong in a different film.
And it's... And Jamie Foxx is not very good.
He's quite bland. But I will say this. There are three fantastic performances.
There are.
Waltz, Samuel L. Jackson,
and
DiCaprio.
I would imagine
incredible.
I genuinely think I don't think I've seen Samuel L. Jackson better than in that film. It is astonishing.
It's his best performance in a long time.
He really should have won something for it. He didn't get a lot of attention.
Waltz took it all, and Jackson DiCaprio deserved a lot more. And Waltz was good, but for my money, DiCaprio was just on fire.
But the thing of it is, I'll always watch a Tarantino film, because even if it's not quite as good as early funny ones, if you like, it's always
Woody Tarantino.
It's always interesting. There's always something. It doesn't do the norm. Death Proof aside, let's say. But in general terms, there's always something. He'll try something. He's not afraid to risk something and give it a go and let scenes play out and do what the hell he wants. And we need more of that.
I think we do, just in general terms.
Not necessarily need more of him.
No, that's it. Although I have heard talk of him possibly finally getting around to giving some kind of release to Kill Bill, the whole bloody affair. The complete 4-hour cut.
Apparently next year.
Yeah, and he's also talking about doing a sci-fi after this.
I wouldn't mind seeing it.
The only thing is, I would say that he's... you could go back reading interviews he has for years, and he's, I'm going to do this, and then just tend to disappear, so...
Yeah.
I'd wait till he starts filming before we...
One more news story. Working Title has acquired the rights to make The Famous Five.
Go on then, let's all together now. We are the fame.
No.
Who are they? George and...
I remember Timmy the Dog, that's all I ever remember.
And Timmy the Dog. That's the only one anyone ever remembers.
Yeah, and rightly so.
Julian, Dick, and George, Timmy the Dog.
Never mind.
This news, I have no real enthusiasm, but this is fine.
Yeah.
I imagine they'll update it to kind of cut out a lot of the politics.
If you're, yes.
No, that's fair enough. They're products of their time. I mean, blessing the blight, and very innocent.
Now,
21 bucks, I mean, there's a lot of money to be made if you get it right.
Yeah, but do you bring it up today, or do you set it in the 60s and 70s?
You can put it in the 60s and 70s with a known wink towards that time.
That would be a very worthwhile thing to do, I think.
I would have thought so, because you get a nostalgia thing as well, which I think could play well.
Working Title, they've done great work with those kind of period adaptations before. I mean, look at Ticker Tailor, Soldier Spy. But a film like that is going to live or die in its director. So choose wisely.
Yeah, I would agree.
So, moving on to the top 10. At 10... Pudsey the Dog, the movie.
At 9?
Pudsey, this is the last time you'll see Pudsey.
Pudsey, it's off to the pound with you.
Second week, down 53% to take 30,000.
This has been a slow week, hasn't it?
Yes. Yes, it has. Today, this week was not a good week for the box office. But, I mean, aside from the number one movie, the rest of them were poor. They were.
One film aside, I'd say.
When you say poor, is in performance or actual quality?
Yeah, no, in terms of performance.
Boyhood, I'm going to get to that.
Yeah, we'll get to that. At 9, The House of Magic, which we talked a little bit last week, apparently is quite good.
Really?
Yeah.
I have not heard that.
I look forward to your review next week, huh?
Apparently, but I am not going to watch that.
Yeah, real good.
You're a big fan, huh?
I don't care. At 8, Boyhood.
Yeah, which went up.
Boyhood went up 80%.
Well, presumably expanded.
It expanded, yes.
And it's the same way in the States that I was looking at.
It expanded.
It's gone from, I think, 5 theaters to 34.
Yeah, it was IFC had this in their own theaters, and then they expanded
and
out.
I presume they're going to continue that. Word of mouth is going to carry this to a healthy profit.
Yeah.
It should aim for what... Grand Budapest Hotel, that kind of money.
Really?
Because that's the most successful.
On that kind of release strategy, I doubt.
I'd be surprised if it gets to that.
Well, that's what they should have aimed for. Because
should have, but but it's not quite as safely marketable as Grand Budapest. I mean, you might think Grand Budapest might actually alienate, but I mean, it's bright, it's colourful, it's very funny.
And the cast,
and it's not. The guts of 3 hours long.
Yeah, but Boyhood is the best reviewed film of the year, and everyone of those critics is proclaiming it to be manna from heaven.
How many people are going to go see a critically acclaimed drama in the middle of summer?
How many people read critics read that just go to a cinema on a Friday night?
Is this just us saying, but we are relevant, I tell you?
No, but we're relevant to ourselves. Why would we do other things?
Word of mouth from...
No, it is. I agree.
Yeah, from, you know, Joe Everybody is solid as well.
It cost 2.5 million to make. It's made 7.5 million so far.
Oh, well done.
You know, it'll keep going. It'll do very well, and rightly so.
Yep.
Despite our reservations.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if,
it's a fine film.
And a noble effort.
Yeah, and if all filmmakers treat their subjects as seriously as Linklater did, we may have better films.
Yeah, speaking of... Transformers Age of Extinction is at number 7.
Thank you, Niall. Beautiful leaving.
Oh, God. Well, good to see. It's down 57% and dropping like a stone.
Yeah, they're going to be crushed. Their Irish market isn't really performing as well as our Chinese market.
Michael Bay will be crying into his millions about how badly it's doing in Ireland.
Badly? It's already earned 1.3 million.
Yeah, but it's not going to reach anything close to... It won't trouble the top 10 in terms of releases in Ireland.
What was the previous Transformer kind of box office?
Better than that. We're talking upwards of 3.
Oh, okay.
So
people getting a little tired of it?
It would seem to be the case.
I hope so. And hopefully this is the age of extinction.
Forget it. Not in
I know.
He'll move to China. He'll make the whole thing in Chinese next time if he has to.
Yeah. I'd agree with that. He probably would.
Then he'll just alienate the entire American audience because they won't go see anything with subtitles.
Into submission.
At 6, it's How to Train Your Dragon 2.
Is it doing okay?
Yes, it is. It's made almost the same amount of money as Transformers, and because it's holding better, it should end up making more, which is brilliant.
Good news.
It's more screens, and it's been going for 2 weeks.
And because there's absolutely no competition in the children's market, it will continue.
You mean
to
number 5 is not pushing it?
No.
It certainly isn't.
At number 5 is Earth to Echo, which, again, is actually quite well received.
And of course, that review as well.
Yeah. That one I might check out because they say it's a lot like E.T. and I love E.T.
It looks sweet enough, but its first week of release, it's earned just under 65,000. Yeah, How to Train Your Dragon 2.
Because you won't be there next week, I would imagine, or very close to it.
I'll be there next week, but it might be in less. It's in 62 locations at the moment. It'll probably go down.
No doubt.
But no, again, it's a kids' film, so they tend to stay around even the Saturday, Sunday morning showings, you know. So
all the kids' clubs, of course.
Yeah. And while the box office receipts aren't huge for them, they keep ticking over. You know, At 4, and down from last week's number 2, and now officially the highest grossing film in Ireland this year.
Bad public. Bad.
Mrs. Brown's Boy is the movie.
Yeah. Well, that was inevitable, wasn't it?
Probably not quite as high as maybe the first week or two would lead you to.
No, 46% drop. That is a
maybe
bad big old drop.
Finally... killed momentum.
Well, yeah, but I mean, when you say kill momentum, 3.4 million euro is not to be sniffed at.
Also,
and
plus, it's still in 65 locations. It's still got a few more weeks.
And that per average is still good. If a movie opened with that in its first week in February, it'd be solid, you know.
Yeah, but Michael Collins' crown as the highest grossing film in Ireland
remains safe. For now.
Until what?
Until Mrs. Brown's Boy is the movie 2.
The sequel,
exactly. Mrs. Brown's Boy is the sequel.
What a wonderful time we did
this. Why did you take the hint of certain? Never mind.
At 3, in its first week, straight in at number 3, The Purge Anarchy.
The horror film that isn't.
The sequel nobody wanted to the film, nobody cared about.
To the film that...
It's a pity you say that, because I've heard this one is actually a bit better than
that. I can only imagine this, because it couldn't be much worse.
Right.
Cut and dry. That is it.
At two. And in its first week of release, straight in at number 2, is Hercules.
Wow.
Starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Number 2. If he's not getting his ass kicked by Scarlett Johansson in the US, it's been handed to him by a bunch of apes here. Poor Dwayne.
He's a...
Spoiler.
That's not actually in the movie, but if it were, it might even be better.
He's carrying movies well, though. I mean, this was... tagged as an absolute turkey before anything came out. People were thinking the worst.
Brett Ratner.
Yeah, exactly. But he's, I think Dwayne has kind of carried this one over the line.
Yeah, but then again, this might be the phenomenon you're talking about, or you've talked about before, where something that's expected to be a turkey and isn't all that bad might
World
be getting
War Z
a bit
territory,
more. Yeah.
Really, the word on it, which had exactly that.
Mm.
And at 1, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes holding onto the number 1 spot. 43% drop, still took 304,000 and has made 1.3 million.
So now, this pleases me because even though it's been out 1 week less than Transformers, it's already outgrossed it.
Yep, because it's a significantly better film.
I'm hoping to see this tomorrow, actually.
I don't have to ask.
Yes,
nice to see. I hope Andy Serkis is getting well paid.
You can now say goodbye to the circus.
I'll go to bed.
There's got more.
He's doing the Jungle Book. He's not getting away.
Tommy Cooper.
Not like that. Not like that.
Ooh, that's quite worrying. Anyway.
That's how you say.
So I do, indeed.
Jay, take that fez off.
It is not a cracker. So,
anyway, moving on.
Moving on to what's out this week. Yes. And what's out on Thursday, Philip went to see it yesterday, it's Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, right.
Philip.
Which is getting quite good reviews.
Okay, then.
Until Philip opens his mouth.
You know me so well. Now, look, normally, and I hate to, you know, put anybody into a pigeonhole here, but Jay is normally the guy who is not the comic book fan here. But yeah, he always raises a fair point. Every film has to be judged more or less equally.
Yeah, I mean, the film's a film. I mean,
exactly.
You can't give it special dispensation for being a horror or a comic book movie.
Or having a glossy advertising campaign, yeah, or a very likable cast. So on that basis, if you look at Guardians of the Galaxy in an objective, open mind kind of way, yeah, this is the start of this side of the Marvel Universe with these characters, and it has exactly the same problems as most of the other Marvel films that are kicking off the franchise, say Captain America or Thor. It's got far too much exposition to get through, and
established universe.
Established universe. There are so many characters.
Literally in this case.
Yeah, you're literally establishing a universe, and with so many characters to juggle and so many ideas, it's inevitable that some of them are going to get short shrift. You've got five nominal leads at the core of it. We've got Chris Pratt, Zoe Saldana, Dave Bautista, and two CGI behemoths played by Bradley Cooper and Vin Diesel. And they're all jostling for screen time and their moment in the sun, and they get it, but they have to get through it via, you know, a lot of exposition, and it's a lot of forced emotion in this. The opening scene sees a flashback to our hero as a boy, and he's in a hospital where his mother is dying of cancer. It's just like, from the opening scene, I'm just thinking, wow, I'm being emotionally manipulated. That's lazy, lazy storytelling. Extremely lazy. But it's an extremely colourful film. When it chooses to get going, it moves at a good old pace, and the cast do hold together. Chris Pratt is a very charming man. I mean, he's not quite Robert Downey Jr. holding it all together in Iron Man, but rascally charm. Zoe Saldana, she's a solid presence. Actually, the character I like the most is probably Dave Bautista. He plays Drax, another member of this crew. But like all the rest of them, he gets a backstory which is just told through exposition. He's out for revenge, family debts, blah, blah, blah. Fine. My hope is that now that we've got this out of the way, it'll lead to better films in the future. It's directed by James Gunn, who gave us such little delights as Super and Slither. And I can see what they were going for by getting him for this film. It wants to be anarchic, and it has the occasional swear word, and at one point Pratt flips somebody off. But so what? Just so what? I just find it relatively unremarkable.
You sound a little meh about it.
I am quite meh about it. It wants to be something really loud and anarchic. It's not that anarchic. The most The most thing that sticks out for me, Glenn Close is in it. She has a small role as kind of this leader of this city-state. And she steals the entire movie for me with just one word. I'm not telling you what that is. You can go see the film and you'll burst out laughing when she says it. But, yeah, that's it fits and bursts. It's the little moments. Because otherwise you're dealing with trying to get all these characters shoehorned in. A lot of CGI behemoths flying about. Some choppy editing. And extremely weak villains. Lee Pace plays the main villain for this one. And he's just this blue and black face painted looms after this. He's after a MacGuffin. Like, they're all after a MacGuffin. And so what? Just so what? It goes flash, bang, wallop, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. It's a franchise starter, pure and simple.
Quick question. Why the good reviews? Why the great reviews? Sorry. Good is... Like, what are you seeing that people are either ignoring or missing?
I think it's the scripting problems more than anything else. As I say, it does entertain a fist and bursts. But, you know, there are these emotional or proportionally emotional scenes that just feel shoehorned in. Yeah, and it's quite episodic too. I mean, it's jumping from this scenario to this scenario to this scenario to boss level at the end with the showdown, whatever.
It is a comic book movie.
Yeah, I know, but
it is a comic book movie.
But this is purporting to be the kind of anarchic, ooh, look at us, we're slightly edgier than the rest comic book movie. It does nothing different, except it's in space.
It's a Marvel film. The course is doing nothing different.
Have a second that, though. If you talk about something like The Avengers, which had a lot of characters, had other movies to set them up.
That is
well put together. It's smart, it's efficient, it goes about with business. It has all the kind of classic setups that you'd expect from a Marvel film. But that was very, very good.
Yeah,
and you're still within that universe, still within the constraints that those movies have.
Yeah, but the Avengers had punchier dialogue, better action, and as you say, it had the opportunities to develop those characters with the movies before.
It had Loki. It had Tom Hiddleston.
Lee Pace is extremely weak villain. He's given very little to do. Karen Gillan is his sidekick. She has little else.
But isn't that's I guess that's kind of what I'm asking then. How can this get the reviews it gets?
I don't know.
That's it.
Like, I know. I appreciate. I feel about this more. I feel like I'm in your position towards Boyhood.
Okay.
This is my Boyhood. This is my right way.
So you feel like, what the hell is everybody else going on about?
No, I can appreciate why people see it. I mean, popcorn entertainment, pure and simple, albeit with a bit too much going on.
One other question, though. I've seen some of the reviews of it compared it to Serenity / Firefly kind of thing.
It's nowhere
valid.
No.
As a concept.
As a concept, yes. Quality wise, no.
I wouldn't. If it's getting close to Serenity, it's doing a lot better than your review suggests.
Serenity is excellent. I really like Serenity, and this Serenity is a lean, dark,
yes,
gritty, very character focused movie. Whereas this is, we've got a lot of characters and we don't know what to do with them.
Well, in fairness, Serenity had a TV show to set them up also. But it still works standalone.
It does work standalone. I saw it long before I saw the show.
Say here.
So that's Guardians. I think a lot of people will like it. I think it's meh. And you can read my review on the website.
Read his lips.
No more raccoons.
Also out this week, we have, as far as the big releases go, we have a new animated film called The Nut Job.
Ooh.
Yeah, Will Arnett.
Will Arnett, Liam Neeson, I think.
Hi, buddy.
Oh, no, we're a long way from the Lego movie here, by all accounts.
Any chance of Liam Neeson mentioned animated on
the internet? Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. But this opened in the States a few months ago, and the reviews were not kind.
It's still okay, though.
I wouldn't expect it. Well, I'd say I wouldn't expect to do much business, but this is the year of animation, where any old crap is earning its share. So, good luck, The Nut Job.
Indeed.
But you do have to compete with How to Train Your Dragon 2, which is holding well in the charts. Good luck.
Whatever the hell that one was called.
Rift to Wacom.
Yeah.
Nah, I think the dragon's where it's at.
Indeed.
Well, yeah, well, this is, as Philip said, an animated film. It's about a selfish purple squirrel named Surly, who's voiced by Will Arnett. And basically, he...
Is this a Lego Movie reunion? Neeson and
Arnett?
They go around...
In this one, he's not Batman.
They go around robbing things, and they...
Robin.
They get on the bad side of a group of urban animals led by a raccoon, played by Liam Neeson. And so, yeah, you know.
It's all about the raccoons this week, people.
Grouchy raccoon, everyone,
that would be. So you got Katherine Heigl, Brendan Fraser in there as well. So there, for that, there, those two are always like signs of quality in film.
What was the last good film Brendan Fraser was in? Please tell me.
The Mummy.
The Mummy, yeah.
No, the one, what was the one he was in?
Gods and Monsters.
No,
God's no, no. God, hey, The Mummy's fun.
The Mummy is fun.
The one that he did where he was lost in time as well was fun as well.
Monkey Bone?
No. He and his family were all, like, they're all in the 60s and they went down into
Last
the nuclear. That's the one, yeah.
That's all right, although it's a long time since I've seen it.
Yeah.
I've had it quite forgettable, but thank you for reminding me.
It was quite literally a blast from the past, there, Phil.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Oh, good luck.
That's the height of the comedy this week. Also, the fifth movie in the Step Up franchise, Step Up.
Finally!
All In.
All In.
Yes.
Yeah, but you know what that means. They are going to do another one. This is a lot.
I tell you, this is... There's nothing I like better talking about a fifth movie in a series I will never see the first four of. Nothing makes me happy.
Hang on. You'll have to see the first one now that's got everybody's favourite in it. Channing Tatum. This is the franchise that...
Am I going to be the completest? I have to do it.
I think so.
when he wins his Oscar, you can say that you saw him in Step Up, the original Step Up.
Good for Channing Tatum. He's rose above such dross.
Needless to say, he's not in this one.
So this is another one of the dance movies. You either like them or you don't. If you like them, you're going to see it anyway. And if you don't, then, you know, it's not for you or Jason.
No, it certainly is not.
So, on to the limited release ones. We have Mood Indigo, which is opening in a small number of cinemas. This is the new Michel Gondry.
Ah.
It showed at JDIF. It got a very mixed reception. My wife went to see it and she called it weird.
So, it's Michel Gondry. It sounds like another patented pile of Gallic quirk
and
from
whimsy.
Whimsy is the word.
And to reinforce the whimsy, it stars Romain Duris and Oswald Tutu.
Yes. So
Of course it's gonna be whimsical. But
it's their bit.
Yeah. But
there's like bubble cars and there's lots of things about dreams.
You can get away with that to a certain extent.
Come on,
I like
change it up a little bit.
Yeah. I mean I like The Signs of Sleep. I like Eternal Sunshine, but
who doesn't?
Well, he tried to change it up by making the Green Hornet, and then nobody went to see it.
I mean, yeah, but was that his fault? I mean, there's changing it up, and then there's just... That sounded like a job for the money.
I would have thought it was a job for her. Like, I imagine somebody else was steering that shit.
So, the Mood Indigo, again, it's another one of these ones that you'll either, you know, you're either on board with or you won't bother going to see. So, if you like Michel Gondry, if you like what he does, then, you know... Yes, exactly.
So we'll expect to see all half dozen Green Hornet fans queuing.
No, I don't think so. I actually quite enjoyed the Green Hornet. No.
Yes.
I liked the original, so it was playing into my wheelhouse. There's a reissue of The Deer Hunter in the IFI.
Now, this is, of course, Michael Cimino's classic. And
seminal.
It's seminal. I won't say classic, I'll say seminal. Oscar winner about Vietnam vets and
a hunting expedition,
and it's Robert De Niro, Christopher Walken, Meryl Streep, John Cazale. It's quite widely regarded, quite widely acclaimed, but there are issues. And I think Jay is the man to elucidate.
When I saw this first, I probably saw this at about 15, 16 years of age when I saw it first, and it blew me away. Like, it's the early kind of introduction to that kind of 70s cinema. You know, it's kind of the end of
it. It's very much that kind of film.
But then I've seen it a couple of times since, as I've got older. And the last time I've seen it, I think it was 3 or 4 years ago. Maybe it was the last time I watched it. It has problems. I mean, it has real problems. I will say it's about 3 hours, is it to be?
It's way too long.
Yeah, it's way too long. Sorry. Yeah. But you can neatly divide the film into three, really. I mean, obviously, the three acts or whatever. But the first third of it that takes place pre-Vietnam in the kind of steel hills, kind of steel works town.
The hunting expedition, yeah, the wedding.
I think it's magnificent. And as character introduction, the character building goes, it's as good an hour as film that American cinema has produced. I think it's that good. Genuinely that good. It is brilliant. You get a sense of people, their lives, what the devastation will be on this when you're impending war and all that kind of things. It's great. Second hour gets into dicey territory.
Yeah.
In terms of Vietnam and the alleged things that take place there. Not going to be spoilers away for films 20 years old.
Like,
yeah. We all know that.
We know. We know those cliches.
It's entertaining somewhat that era, but rarely problematic. It's well done. It's well put together.
But
And then you got the last hour, which is a fiasco. It's idiotic. There's moments in it, but the whole thing. I mean, no, what they were talking about. It's idiotic. And it's far-fetched, and it's ridiculous, and it unbalanced the whole movie completely.
For me. I know what you mean, in that, you know, you have all this character building, and yeah, you can always show the misery of war, and fair enough.
Without hammering it.
Yeah, I mean, this is, it's, you're right, that final hour, and
there's great moments in it.
It must be said that...
I'm not suggesting the whole hour is awful.
No, the Russian roulette scenes, they're tense as heck, but thematically, it is a problem because you are using a sledgehammer to crack a nut. Yeah. It really is quite heavy-handed.
And it sounds like, and it looks like a made-up sledgehammer. You know what I mean? It's absurd. Because if you actually think about it, like, how long has he been doing that and winning? He just needs a basic kind of plot level. I mean,
he has to lose eventually.
Yeah, but how long can you literally get away with something? I don't know. And the performance are great. Walking is great.
Walking is
terrific. And he's terrific.
He is.
All the cast are great. It's a vision from a director. Like, it very much is vision. And yeah, if you buy into it, I think it works. And a lot of people love it.
Yeah.
The film.
I think it shows. It really shows all of Cimino's qualities and faults as a filmmaker.
I agree.
He's extremely ambitious. He's got an incredible eye.
Oh, visually, it's a stunning job.
But he is, you know, that ambition has to be tamed.
Yeah.
And we will talk more about that presently when we come to Heaven's Gate. But that's, as I say, we'll come back to that.
Also out this week, the IFI is doing a very interesting thing. It's that BFI in London is after gathering together a number of shorts and cinema reels and stuff from 1914 to show what cinema was like at the outbreak of the war, of the First World War. And so they're going to be showing it in the IFI exclusively.
Called A Night at the Cinema 1914.
Yeah, so this looks amazing.
That sounds really worthwhile. I would definitely be up for this.
I think it sounds really interesting.
As an experiment.
But part of me really doesn't want to see it. Because I think I'd hate it.
Why?
Episodic, quick bits. And
it's a series of shorts.
I know. I don't know if it was for me.
You're probably not a guy for shorts anyway.
I like a long
drama. Who likes short shorts?
Rim drama. I like short shorts.
In Polish.
No, I'd say it's great for that kind of thing. I'm just not quite sure. Maybe if it got me in a vendetta kind of mood.
I don't know if that comes in bottles.
Vendetta by Jean-Paul Gaultier.
Not those kinds of bottles. With Hugo Weaving selling it on the billboard. Hey, if Nicolas Cage can sell watches with that terrifying grin, I'll buy anything.
That's a fair point.
So moving on to what Philip was talking about earlier, and it's the IFI are screening all next month.
You want me to pronounce this in properly? Film maudit.
There we go. Yeah. So, or otherwise known as cursed films.
The cursed films.
Yeah. So these are films that whose production was very, very problematic.
And so, in the case of a lot of these, not even the production, most often the post-production, troubles with edits,
Or with the studio,
studio. Yeah.
So we have the Magnificent Ambersons.
That's
which
the classic
is,
example.
Yeah.
It's template, isn't it?
It is.
We will never, ever, ever see the original version of, because the studio destroyed it.
The last day, God comes down with wearing the Ten Commandments and that missing reel of the Magnificent Ambersons.
Orson Welles is God?
Well, duh!
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Although, God's coming down. He'd probably be Orson. Maybe.
I'm back for dessert, bitches.
Orson will be voicing it much the same word style. Yeah.
Indeed.
Someone call Maurice LaMarche. There's a job.
So they're showing, what is it, 9, 10 films in total? So we have Freaks.
From the month of August.
Yeah, from August 3rd to August 24th. So we have Freaks.
I would have thought Freaks at this stage has passed into the canon, but.
It has, but again, they had to.
And it's great for them.
It is, but you can imagine circus sideshow Freaks, that kind of thing would have to be edited down to try and make it even vaguely palatable.
I'm just wondering
audience.
How. Like, I thought the reading of this season was to kind of look at films that are still kind of. Like, if you look at something like The Deer Hunter, or sorry, Heaven's Gate, say. Mm. There's some people reappraising it, and some people think it's all about touch.
It's not, but I think, no, the primary motivation seems to be just these ones that went through the tour. Okay. Their reaction is an afterthought. And Magnificent Ambersons is regarded as a minor classic. Freaks 2.
They're missing Cleopatra, if you're going to go for ones that had incredibly troubled productions.
Well, then again, that's, well, you mean The Magnificent Cleopatra.
Yeah.
Yeah, but plenty of people have seen it. It's...
But plenty of people have seen.
It's too long, it's definitely dull, and cripes, I don't need to see that again. Really
no, I'm just
don't.
Saying that there are a number, because we have.
Picked 10 films, all infinitely better.
Yeah, so we have Magnificent Ambersons is the second film, then we have Silken Skin, which I know absolutely nothing about. It's Francois Truffaut.
Okay.
Yeah. It's screened as Cannes, it was called Fiasco. So, yeah. Then we have L'Eclisse.
Oh, Antonioni, gotta go.
I haven't seen that.
It's Antonioni and one of the most beautiful women to have ever existed, Monica Vitti. Yeah, that's a must see.
Then we have Seconds. So that's John Frankenheimer. That's a Faustian sci-fi.
Not enough of those.
No, love Faust. That's the thing. The film received such hostility at Cannes that Frankenheimer refused to leave for his post-screening press conference. He wouldn't do it.
I wish I had more directors to do that.
Yeah, I agree.
Lars von Trier could learn a lot from that particular one. Then we have We Can't Go Home Again.
Can't we?
Well, no, well, I don't know. Apparently not. Something happened at home. Apparently we can't go. So, yeah. Again, I know absolutely nothing about that one. So, it'd be interesting to check that out.
You're really selling it now.
Yeah, well, I don't know anything about it, so what can I do? You know?
What else?
Margaret, which you adore.
I do. I am an unashamed member of hashtag Team Margaret.
Yeah, as am I.
I got a retweet from J. Smith Cameron, one of the film stars, the other evening. I was thrilled.
I would have liked to see the director's cut in the IFI.
This is the theatrical cut, yes.
Yeah, they can't get the director's cut.
I have it on DVD.
Like, that sounds like an excuse.
They can borrow it.
Yeah, but you're dealing with distribution.
Well. I know.
People.
It's a pity. But yeah,
the theatrical cut is still well worth
watching. It's an excellent film. It's really, really brilliant.
Yeah. And on the other side, then, of The Magnificent Ambersons, you have the season concluding with the other ultimate troubles.
Well,
production.
We have one more. I found out something about We Can't Go Home Again. It's Nicholas Ray. It's an experimental film that he made with his film students.
I read up a little bit about it. It sounds dreadful. Absolutely dreadful.
Well, go along and have a laugh. Have a beer and have a laugh.
I don't know if I'm going to see that one.
Yeah, it's got 5.8 on IMDb.
Oh, I wouldn't have that.
Wow, that's low. And Cruising. Which,
Friedkin.
Yeah, see now, Friedkin makes good movies.
He
just
Friedkin mind.
Does.
He does.
Sorcerer is brilliant. More people need to watch that. It is the most ill-conceived name for a film. Sorcerer's it's the name of the truck. Well, it is a dreadful name for a film.
It's neatly remastered.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
it's
on Blu-ray.
Brilliant.
Yeah, you need to see it on TV.
Yeah. Just for that scene where they make the bridge and... Anyway.
Jesus.
And it closes with Heaven's Gate.
There you go.
So, yeah, Michael Cimino. And
now, you were talking about how some of these films are being received, and or were received and have been received since. As you said, there's a lot of them that are getting slightly appraised. Cruising got a very big backlash on release. It seemed today with a bit more leniency, but still got a lot of problems thematically and representation of gay subculture in New York. And then Heaven's Gate. This is a film that deserves a reappraisal.
It's an extraordinary looking film.
It is stunning. Sigmund never did anything. This is his best.
It's beautiful.
His best work as a DP. Good cast too. Christopher Walken, Jeff Bridges, John Hurt, Isabelle Huppert.
Chris Christopherson. It's madness though, isn't it? And like the whole thing. Like either you read the book.
I've never read the book about
the
making.
Great.
But when you look at the film,
and
you can kind of see that in the film because the thing is just so huge.
Yeah.
It's a miracle anybody could control it.
And couldn't.
But that said, I mean, besides the problems, it's too long. It's got bloat everywhere in every sense.
Yeah.
It is big, but a film that big, it deserves to be seen on the big screen. And I have, and it is a stunning-looking film.
I haven't seen it on the big screen.
I think you should. I think a lot of people should. You might just find something you like. It's nowhere near as bad as people
I wouldn't imagine it is. I mean, I've seen it a long time ago, and I remember liking it. I think I watched it over a couple of days.
I'd say a lot of people just have to.
Yeah.
But I sat through it on a big screen, and I think it was about worth it.
Well, I was younger then. I didn't know any better.
When we were young and foolish.
I don't think I was ever young and foolish.
So, other film festival is on this weekend in the Lighthouse is Gaze, the LGBT film festival. So, it's got some big enough films. You know, you have The Case Against Age in there, and you have they're showing Age of Consent as well, Boy Meets Girl, a couple of other ones that
they're also showing The Celluloid Closet, which is a terrific documentary,
oh.
And they're showing it for free.
Really?
It's excellent. I only watched it last year again. It's very good.
That's
as an overview and interesting, based on the book.
Isn't that the guys who did Howl and the Life and Times of Harvey Milk?
It's very good. It's a very good and well worth watching.
Mm.
So this will be highlighting for the next 5 days or for 5 days starting on Thursday. A lot of what's good in the lesbian and gay, bisexual and transsexual.
And it
different
like there's actually
film.
A choice over a 5 day period.
Yeah.
Mm. A hell of a lot of films.
One of the most interesting things is they're going to show African Pride.
That was at Galway, wasn't it?
It was at Galway, but it's all about the homophobia in South Africa, and it's meant to be brilliant.
Yeah,
documentary.
Really good things about it.
Some very interesting films about that topic. What's the other one?
God Lives Uganda.
Yeah.
But what's coming out, what's been showing before, it is 10 minutes of Conor Horgan's film about Panty Bliss, the Queen of Ireland.
Yeah.
They're showing a 10-minute preview. So that, and Conor Horgan's going to be there as well.
Yeah, I think they're drumming up some finishing money. I think that's the plan for to get it for next year.
Good.
So that will be great. They're also showing a series of Irish shorts. From contemporary Irish LGBT filmmakers. So this is
interesting.
Yeah, so
sounds like a fine lineup.
Yeah, so I will be around it, and I'll be checking out some of the things that are there, and I'll report back on it next week.
Very good.
So moving on to a rant.
Oh, yes. We always like it when Niall has pre-prepared a rant.
Yeah.
And your rant is on now?
My rant is on the fact that independent news and media have said it's about 50 Shades of Grey. So 50 Shades of Grey has the highest viewing of any trailer that has dropped this year. It is going to be a monumental success for Universal when it's released on February 14th next year.
Why did you pick that date, I wonder?
Yeah.
Who knows?
But they're releasing it in two shades. So the state, So in America, they're releasing an R-rated version, so that's
15.
Roughly equivalent to our 15A, 16, depending on the content in it. And they're releasing an NC-17 version, which
full-blown 18.
Yeah, which is it's basically, yeah, it shows nudity and sex including rape in some instances. That's their standard for NC-17. It's our standard for 18.
Indeed, actually, it should be pointed out that the NC-17 in America, a lot of cinema chains won't show their films because they're perceived as being in a box office death.
Yeah. Yes, and it was the rating at which films used to be classified as X before, yeah. And then X got adopted by the sort of porn industry, and so as a result, they've made not suitable for children or anyone under the age of 17.
But it is generally reserved for films with strong sexual themes and scenes. So
or drug use.
Violence, you can do anything you want, and you'll get a 12 rating.
As long as you're not showing the blood.
The Expendables 3.
Yeah. But notable NC-17s in recent years, things like Lust, Caution, and Show Girls. Yeah.
So the reason for my rant is the Independent News and Media came out with a story at the weekend saying that the film was going to be censored in Ireland and that Ireland may not be able to see the censored version of it, which is utter crap.
Because there's no such thing as a film censor.
Also, yes, De Valera has died a long time ago, so we can stop this now.
Yeah, so
the wage isn't knocking down the door now.
There hasn't been a censor in Ireland for years. We have IFCO, which are the Irish Film Classification Office, and they will classify any film that is submitted to them. You can ask for their advice, and they will tell you what scenes you can cut in order to gain a lower rating. They do that. That's a service that they provide. BFI do that as well. Yeah. Generally speaking, they will rate whatever's put in front of them. And if it's hard enough, they will rate it 18s. So Nine Songs got rated 18s. That film is sex from start to finish. That is pretty much all that's in it. So you also
have
Nymphomaniac, which was an 18s rated film as well. So there's nothing in 50 Shades of Grey that there doesn't appear to be, because they've tamed it down. They haven't gone as far as the book has gone, because the actors aren't prepared to do that. So there's nothing in 50 Shades of Grey that would merit it not getting a rating. Like, is it want to be a Serbian film level of extreme perversion in order to get...
To film the book.
Yeah.
Well, so it's but just, the thing is, when they say it's going to be censored...
Yeah, it's just scaremongering.
It'll be censored by the filmmakers, censor.
It's not a censor, though.
There's no such thing as a censor.
It'll be cut by the filmmakers to release it in whatever version that they wish. And Ireland's film censors, film classification office is actually much more liberal than our British colleagues.
That's BBFC, that's true.
Because our tolerance of language is much higher than what theirs is.
Yeah.
Also, you know, let the facts get in the way of good story. I know. I mean, you know, that's what they're doing.
We have dual ratings here at that sort of first level. We have a 15A and a 16, which the British ones do not have. They only have a 15 rating. They do. They did adopt the 12A, similar to our own, but we did it first.
Yeah.
And so
goes.
It's.
But I would agree that I think the ICO do a better job. They're, you know, they're a bit easier on language. They're a little bit stronger, a little bit tougher on violence,
which is no bad thing.
No bad thing. And when it comes to rating sex, I think they just get it. I mean,
I think,
if it is hard enough,
savvy,
if born,
I think savvy
they are savvy.
I think
yeah,
that's what it is.
Exactly.
The common sense, a bit of the understand context of film. I think that's the thing. So if this is here for a reason, as opposed to,
But clearly, Independent News and Media do not have this nouse for context.
No, so they had put it up online under independent.ie. They also had it in the Herald, and it is just another case of this sort of just clickbait type headlines from a national bloody newspaper. They should be held to a higher standard than this.
I mean, they're not by me, but they should be.
No,
like,
no, but they're not a red top.
No, they're not.
You know, this is...
Although the Herald technically...
Well, you know, Tony O'Reilly isn't doing quite so well anymore, so I suppose they have to, you know, do anything to bring in the figures, bring in the clicks. It's nonsense. Absolute nonsense.
Anyway, I read it on Saturday morning, and it enraged me, and so I needed to get that out.
Fair enough.
Right, so on that note, we'll leave it there for the week.
Very good.
Excellent.
See you all next week.
Ta-ra.
That is literally the dumbest thing I've ever heard.